Good morning and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. The first article is the continuation of the top 10 insights from the science of a meaningful life in 2025. Our team names the most provocative and influential findings published during the past year. I read numbers 1 through 7 last week, and here's number 8. Children as young as 5 prefer adults who express doubt to those who are overly confident. Intellectual humility involves recognizing the limits of our own knowledge and staying open to changing our minds in light of new information. It helps us get along better with others and bridge differences, making it a virtue worth cultivating in our children. While it may seem like intellectual humility is beyond the understanding of young children, a study published this year in developmental psychology found that even 5.5-year-olds already recognize the value of humility and prefer humbler adults to more arrogant adults. In the study, 111 children were presented with an ambiguous object, for example, something that could be a sponge or rock, or an ambiguous word, for example, bat, which could be an animal or sports equipment. Then they watched 2 adults identify the object or word and express doubt or not about it. Each adult presented themselves as amiable and initially identified the object or word in the same way. But the humbler person modeled more uncertainty, saying their identification could be wrong, while the more arrogant person said that they were sure that they were right. Afterward, the children rated who they thought was smarter and nicer, and whom they liked more and would rather learn from. In analyses, the researchers found that children 5.5 years old and older, no matter their gender, preferred humbler people to arrogant people in every way, with that preference growing stronger with every additional year of age. This suggests that young children recognize the benefits of humility and that adults can model uncertainty for children. Learning it's okay to admit you don't know something could help children in their future relationships, including across group differences. There is power in saying, I'm not entirely sure, and my knowledge is fallible, and so is yours. Maybe we can come together and talk, says co-author Shauna Bose of Vanderbilt University. I think the earlier in life kids learn to do this, the better. 9. People are forming relationships with robots, whether we like the trend or not. Artificial intelligence has invaded almost every aspect of human life, from media creation to food systems to transportation. Personal relationships are no exception. AI companies such as Zia Ois and Replica explicitly market their chatbots as companions, boyfriends, and girlfriends. That label rings true for tens of millions of users who are developing bonds with these robots, whose algorithms are built to validate our feelings and respond to our bids for attention instantly. About 20% of high school students have formed a romantic relationship with a chatbot or know someone who has, according to a survey from the Center for Democracy and Technology. Among U.S. adults, about the same percentage have chatted with an AI simulating a romantic partner, with usage higher among young adults aged 18 to 30, about 31% of men and 23% of women, according to a study by the Wheatley Institute at Brigham Young University. Users describe daily lives intertwined with AI romantic partners, from watching television together to relying on them for non-judgmental emotional support, according to a systemic review in Computers in Human Behavior Reports that examined 23 studies on romantic AI. While these interactions can foster self-reflection and personal growth, they also raise dangers such as emotional manipulation and erosion of real-life human relationships. An article in Perspectives on Psychological Science assessed the degree to which AI chatbot relationships mimic the functions of human relationships and explored the risks. The authors, psychologists at the University of California, Los Angeles, concluded that humans and their chatbot partners can influence each other, generate feelings of closeness, and facilitate growth. However, they identified areas of concern, including the risk of chatbots responding inappropriately in moments of crisis, normalizing problematic behavior, and creating dependency. Because chatbots make only superficial requests of their users, relationships with them cannot provide the benefits of negotiating with and sacrificing for a partner, and may reinforce undesirable behaviors, they wrote. These developments expose gaps in human connection and show how intimacy can be shaped by technology. Sahar Habib Ghazi writes in Greater Good. Understanding AI love may help us better understand ourselves and the human bonds we continue to seek. 10. If we put a country's wealth aside, we can see what other factors bolster happiness. Every year, the World Happiness Report ignites conversations about which countries are thriving and which ones seem to be struggling and why that might be. While in general, wealthier countries tend to be happier, some nations do far better than their economic resources would predict, while others underperform despite relative affluence. In a paper published in May by the European Journal of Social Psychology, psychologist Moshen Jashanlu took the conversation to a new level with an idea called wealth-adjusted life satisfaction, or WALS, W-A-L-S. Instead of asking simply, how happy is this country, WALS asks, how happy given its wealth. By statistically isolating the portion of life satisfaction explained by a country's GDP per capita, this measure reveals how effective each society seems to be in converting material resources into well-being. The results are revealing. Countries like Nicaragua, Nepal, Kazakhstan far outperform expectations, reporting levels of life satisfaction that rival or exceed those of much wealthier nations. Conversely, places such as South Korea, Hong Kong, and Bahrain score lower than their GDP might suggest, indicating that wealth alone isn't enough. What distinguishes the happiness overachievers? The study highlights several non-economic forces that seem to matter: job quality and meaningful work, sense of autonomy and freedom, social connections and community engagement, and everyday enjoyment. These factors help explain why some societies, despite material limitations, are still able to sustain high levels of life satisfaction. This study suggests that instead of focusing narrowly on economic growth as a key to human flourishing, governments and corporations might make targeted investments in community, meaningful work, personal freedom, and livable, lively cities and towns. As Josh Anlew concludes in a Greater Good essay, ultimately, building societies that prioritize the wise use of resources for human well-being may be the clearest path toward a more hopeful and humane future. You are listening to Greater Good Magazine, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. Four ways for parents to manage their emotions. Parenting isn't just about navigating your children's emotional ups and downs. We also need to work with our own big feelings. By Julie Fraga, Hillary Jacobs Hendel. And this was written on December 16th, 2025. When toddlers melt down and teens snap back, it's natural for us to have emotions. Some parents feel overwhelmed or out of control. Others try to push their emotions away. Emotions, after all, can be quite painful. Whether it's joy, fear, rage, or anxiety, emotions affect parents every day. How we manage our emotions influences our children's ability to do the same. Parents who honor their emotions model self-awareness and self-regulation for their kids. It's a skill set that makes our emotional lives flourish. Children who can navigate tough feelings are more likely to become resilient, self-confident, and optimistic, even when struggles emerge. Managing our emotions, however, isn't always easy. Nearly every parent loses their patience, especially when kids don't listen, talk back, or continually melt down. And in a world filled with strife, anxiety can fuel rumination and stress, leaving us sick with worry. While we cannot turn off our emotions or will them away, there are tools that we can use to work with them. Understanding the mechanics behind our emotions is like looking under the hood of a car. Once you know how each part works, it's easier to make things run smoothly. Here are four practical ways to manage your emotions so you can help your kids do the same. Practice noticing your body. Contrary to what society often tells us, we can't outsmart our emotions with logic. Like thirst and hunger, emotions begin in the body. If you're deep in the parenting grind, these emotional experiences may ring true. I can't stop worrying about my child getting hurt. Worry and rumination, especially about our children's safety, are thoughts that manifest from the anxiety in our body. Anxiety's job is to help us ward off potential danger. There's an emotion that can make our hearts race and our stomachs feel upset. Anxiety also makes our shoulders feel tense and hijacks our ability to think clearly. Parenting is so stressful, it makes me lose my cool. Anger is a turbocharged emotion with impulses that make us want to yell or fight back. It's an emotion that helps us assert ourselves. Physically, anger makes our jaw feel tense and our temperature rise. I feel guilty whenever I put my needs above my child's. Guilt is a self-conscious emotion that prevents us from hurting others, including our children. However, as parents, we often feel guilty when we've done nothing wrong. We feel guilty for choosing self-care over playing with our kids. And we feel guilty for not being the perfect parent who never makes a mistake. Guilt gives us a bad feeling inside and causes fatigue. Simply noticing how your emotions show up in your body is the first step to working with them. One helpful tip is to check in below the neck. Imagine you're an emotional detective and notice the sensations that arise. Get to know your emotions. Emotions are brilliant messengers that tell us what we need and what is good for us. We need them to maintain relationships, navigate tough circumstances, and survive. Some emotions, such as guilt, anxiety, and shame, are called inhibitory emotions. Inhibitory emotions protect us and others from our core emotions, such as sadness, anger, fear, disgust, joy, and excitement. For example, maybe your teen sometimes offends you and you feel guilty. Or you constantly feel anxious around your mother who always criticizes your parenting. In both cases, guilt and anxiety block access to the core emotion of anger. Core emotions are pre-wired in the brain to help us to survive. They prompt us to take actions that benefit us. Anger helps us stand up for ourselves, while sadness helps us to mourn. Fear prompts us to avert danger, while disgust prevents us from ingesting things that can poison or harm us. Positive emotions such as joy and excitement can help us celebrate big wins. Work the change triangle. Growing up, if our emotions are repeatedly rebuffed, shamed, or neglected, we learn to block and suppress them, even as adults. As parents, we may beat ourselves up for making a mistake, shut down when we're angry, or drink too much when stress reaches a fever pitch. These behaviors are defenses that protect us from unbearable feelings. With the parents we work with, we provide an emotional health tool for parenting called the Change Triangle. Initially developed by David Milan for psychotherapists, Hillary, adapted it from the academic literature to teach the general public about emotions. This tool guides you from your defenses and inhibitory emotions to experience your core emotions. During any tough moment, you can locate your emotional state on the Change Triangle. Anxiety, guilt, and shame are inhibitory emotions. Additional defenses include eating or drinking too much, trying to control our kids, or spending too much time on social media. For example, imagine that you feel guilty whenever you can't fix your child's problems or make their pain go away. Guilt is an inhibitory emotion on the Change Triangle. Remember that inhibitory emotions block core emotions. We can identify our core emotions by scanning the body from head to toe and noticing the physical sensations that arise. Heaviness in the heart is a sign of sadness, while an impulse to run points toward fear. Excitement and joy make us feel larger than life. Anger makes our blood boil and comes with an impulse to yell, while disgust makes our stomachs churn. Once you identify your core emotion, remember to name it. Naming our emotions helps dial down distress. Psychologists call this emotional granularity. Research shows this small act helps regulate our emotions and improves our overall well-being. Naming our emotions also calms the limbic system in the brain, helping the body to relax. The next time you feel sad, angry, guilty, or experience any other emotion, pause, name it, and validate your emotion. Once you know how you feel, you're in a better position to use that information to identify its cause, calm your body, and problem solve. And last, exercise reflection. Self-reflection helps us better understand our emotions and identify their root cause. When distress arises, try to answer these questions. What is bringing up this emotion right now? And is this emotion somehow related to my own childhood? If so, how? We call these types of questions self-awareness stretches, and they foster introspection about our emotional lives. We learn how to parent from the way we were raised, and without awareness, old patterns repeat. For example, if our parents shamed us whenever we made a mistake, we may do the same to our kids. Or if conflict was always avoided, we may steer clear of tough conversations even when they need to be addressed. Even when old childhood wounds and traumas show up in the present, there's always hope for change and relief. Learning to name, validate, and work through our emotions forms new neural pathways in the brain, a process called neuroplasticity. Whenever we face stressful parenting moments, we can navigate our emotions by bringing awareness to our bodies, naming and validating our feelings, working through the change triangle, and using self-reflection to guide us. Each of these tools helps us to manage our feelings skillfully in a more regulated state. We remain connected with our kids and model what it means to emotionally thrive. You've been listening to Greater Good Magazine from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.